Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm going to tell you what
you need to know. All right, first thing that you need to know is that the weekend's here. That's one good thing. Also, that our friends at Applause Custom Sight and Sound have you covered. Listen, you're staying home more. You need the ultimate when it comes to smart home technology, in-home entertainment, in-home theaters. Nobody does it better than Applause Custom Sight and Sound. Find them online at applausetheater.com. That's applausetheater.com or call 913-498-1183. Whether you're building new, whether you're renovating, or whether your house is already done, they can make everything all integrated, working right from the touchscreen on your smartphone. Just call 913-498-1183. Find them online at applausetheater.com. It is just that simple. Dayton Moore talking a little bit ago. The Royals making some news here today, as yesterday the big news was 11 different minor league teams cutting, or 11 different major league teams cutting 50 minor leaguers. That's not happening with the Royals. Dayton Moore is happy that the Royals are not releasing minor league players, as many, many other teams have already done and are going to do.
We felt that it was really, really important not to release one minor league player during this period of time, a time that we needed to stand behind them. The weekly amount that they get, truthfully, is not a whole lot of money. It's not my money, okay? Let me just preface that. It's not my money. But in the scheme of things, it's not like they're getting rich. But we wanted to just stay with them. John Sherman understood that from the very beginning. I mean, this guy, when you evaluate and you look into the history of what he's accomplished and how he's accomplished things in his business and in his personal life, this was a very easy conversation to have with John Sherman. He understood our philosophy greatly.
Without sounding corny, but how much did that warm you to hear those words from the owner?
Well, it's special because this thing is so much bigger than us, Flanny. I mean, we have a very small window of opportunity in this game. We take nothing for granted.
Right.
And we are stewards of this game. I think John Sherman said that from the very beginning. David Glass always talked about being a steward of the game. And that's what we've always tried to do. We just want to make the game better than we left. We just want to make it better than we found it. That's all.
How refreshing is that?
Extremely. It's not my money. But he said it was a very easy conversation to have with Sherman, who said he understood that from the very beginning. And so it seems, he said, we're stewards of the game, and clearly Dayton Moore and John Sherman are on board, and clearly Mike Matheny to a degree is also, because I can't remember the exact term he used when he talked to you, but what he was getting forward to the players about, you know, it's our job to kind of carry this game forward. That seems to be a completely organizational philosophy, that they see themselves as caretakers of this great game, and they backed up their words with their actions.
And I think Dayton Moore continues, and now John Sherman has joined forces with him to operate on the idea that, listen, we may not be able to, you know, buy the biggest contracts, and we may not be able to go out and just win all the free agent battles, but what we can do is be the organization that cares the most.
Yeah.
And they are making, you know, if you're a minor leaguer and, you know, you become a minor league free agent and you've got an option to play for one team or the other, I mean, which one would you rather play for? You'd rather play for the Kansas City Royals. I mean, this is going to be legendary amongst the minor leagues. We'll see if any other teams jump on board and do this. But it, you know, and will it mean that they get a Hall of Famer out of it? No. But will they have a higher caliber of player, a higher caliber of individual in their clubhouse? Will it help with their development side of things? Yes, it will.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it will. And, you know, creating an organization of high character people, I think, is something that will result in wins on down the road. And Dayton Moore has always done that. That was part of what they did when they kind of relaunched themselves. You know, I think they had their one run, and they said, okay, we got to do something different. And one of the things they said, you know, if you hear Rusty Koontz talking to us at spring training, he said, Dayton Moore said, listen, we can care more than anybody else. That's one of the things we can do, and they continue to do it. And I think it's a smart play, and I think Sherman jumping right in and being ready to back his play and do it with his money, because it is Sherman and the ownership group's money, I think is smart. And I think on an either-or, the Royals are going to win out. They're going to be known as there's players firing out at owners. Sherman's going to have his own issues, right, with the fact that he's part of the ownership group that made an offer that none of the players like. But, you know, when in doubt, who's the organization that's the best to their players? It's the Kansas City Royals. And I think that's going to pay dividends. And furthermore, you know, talking about their employees, 150 employees, none of them are getting furloughed or cut. The upper levels of management are going to take some pay reductions, but with the assurance that they will be given that money back when greener pastures arrive, when better economic days arrive, they will get that money back. Dayton Moore says John Sherman, the Royals ownership group, wanted to lessen the economic impact on all the employees around the club.
The economics of the game right now are very challenging, Lynn, as we all know. And, you know, Mr. Sherman being a new owner, majority owner, obviously he was with Cleveland for a period of time. But he understands the strain on the families. And, you know, as I said before, he was very thoughtful through this entire process. He wanted to make sure that we were dotting every I, crossing every T, examining every scenario. He literally went individual by individual in the baseball operations department. And wanted to know how certain reductions would affect certain families. He was that thoughtful with it, something that we all appreciated. You know, John wanted to make sure that there was no furloughs, no layoffs, and talked about a shared sacrifice at the upper levels of leadership, which we are really proud to take part of. I mean, that we're honored to take part of these sacrifices, to take part in these reductions, because we were all area scouts and coaches at one point in time. We understand what young families are going through, and we understand the pay scale and the minor leagues and scouting and player development. And so we were really honored to take part of it, and really because of John Sherman's leadership.
What more can you say?
Individual by individual to see how it impact each family. And that's not a mom and pop organization. I mean, there's a lot of individuals.
We had a caller who called earlier and talked about the fact that the Royals had basically made their parent company home in Delaware because there are better tax laws there. And so Missouri losing tax money. I got it, but you know what? They're paying more taxes by paying their employees. Have they cut their pay? Their employees are paying full taxes right here. Listen, I get it, and let's just see. Here's what I would offer, because I think it's a good point. You know, you hear that, and you're like, well, wait a minute. This is the town and the county and the state that's paying for your stadium and everything, and you're going to come to us probably and want a downtown ballpark, and you're going to want us to pay for it. Let's see what they do. Okay, let's see what they do. Did he move it out there to get better tax situation so that they can come back and they ask for less money? And you know, that part of it is to make a healthier business, that they can inject more money into the project. I don't know, let's see. But I know this. They didn't move the team.
Yeah.
Okay, so the team and all those players that are making all that money, they're not paying taxes in San Antonio or Portland or Charlotte or Nashville or any other market that's clamoring for baseball and that could have been used as leverage to try to either sell the team for more or, once he bought it, to go get more. So let's do keep that in mind. There may be some lost tax revenues because they've moved the parent corporation to Delaware, where every credit card company hides for their tax benefit. Okay, that's fine. But we have Royals baseball in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
We have it in Kansas City. And that's priority number one. Let's just see how they run things. So far, how Sherman and his group run things are A, blanket okay with me.
Yep.
They're A-okay with me.
Yep.
This is big today. What they're doing today is big, really big. Let's move on. We'll turn to the Kansas City Chiefs. Clyde Edwards-Helaire available today via the press conference. I asked Edwards-Helaire, if he, you know, there's never some times he just kind of yeah-yad. You know, Coach O, like we hear Ed Orgeron, and we love him. We love that thick accent. And there's no doubt, I said, look, I'm sure you understand him better than we do, being from the area. But are there ever some times you're just kind of nodding your head and saying, yeah, and you have no idea what he said, like we sit up here sometimes? And then, you know, basically what's the difference between Coach O and Andy Reid?
I understand Coach O and always did understand of this, you know, something about it is different and something about us down here is a little different about how we hear things. So, you know, I was able to understand everything. And, you know, just it's hard really to compare and contrast. I really, you know, the 15 minutes that I was able to sit next to, you know, Coach Reid in my combine meeting. You know, you still can't get a temperament on a person. But as far as right now, I mean, you know, Coach O is the punch yourself in the face type of guy. And Coach Reid, you know, he can, from the videos and everything that I've seen, he can get fired up and he can make some things happen. And that's what I love about a coach. And he's completely genuine. So right now, that's all I have for you.
I think it's Coach Reid can get fired up. We don't usually see that side. Every now and then he's been testy. Like, right? If you're going to sit here and pummel me, probably about who's here and not here, we'll just do the minimum. We'll remember that day where he got a little bit fired up, but interesting to hear him say that. But down Louisiana way, they understand what Coach O is saying. And I don't many times, but they do.
And standing in front of someone, it's like other than hearing them on TV or hearing a bite, you it is easier to understand what someone's saying if you're watching them talk.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
So that helps.
Absolutely.
Too.
But still, and he had a big smile on his face. While I was asking that question, he had a big smile on his face, knowing exactly where I was going. You know, I thought that was, you know, it was a fun little moment to hear him talk about Coach O. And obviously a lot of respect for him, a lot of admiration for Coach Orgeron, and building that with Andy Reid. So Clyde Edwards-Helaire talking today, and certainly looking forward to seeing him in a Chiefs uniform. Mitchell Schwartz playing at a very, very high level for the Chiefs for a long time. You know, he had something funny. I'm not going to play this one. Because we're limited on time, but he was asked about, you know, getting attention, getting acclaim. Mick Schaefer asked him about, you know, hey, you're starting to get some attention and acclaim for one, your play on the field, but also, you know, your cooking and all that kind of stuff. And he said, yeah, it was a very thin line. You kind of go from like when everyone's talking about you being underrated, you're like really underrated. And then you're like immediately overrated. Like it's a line.
It's like
you're underrated. And then after you've been underrated for too long, then you're automatically overrated.
It's like a banana.
Yeah.
It's not ripe. It's not ripe. It's junk.
Yeah, crap. Here it is. Green, brown. So I thought that was interesting, and he's always fun to listen to, Mitchell Schwartz. I asked him if he thought about, you know, the fact that DeMaurice Smith had talked about what was the scale of 1 to 10. You know, just like had he talked to the NFLPA, you know, are they starting to prepare for, are they discussing it? I said, the first person I heard say anything that wasn't full speed ahead playing the whole season was DeMaurice Smith, who's the head of the NFLPA. And when he was asked about the chances of a season in 2020 on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most likely, he thought they were a 6 or 7. Here's what Mitchell Schwartz thought.
None that I've been a part of. I'm sure, you know, at the high level, they're doing all that with, you know, Treader and D and all the team reps. You know, we have had the benefit of time. I mean, we're still 2 months away from, you know, when training camp would start. So we've been particularly fortunate as a league to kind of get hit with this at the right time. And also, obviously, selfishly, you know, a month earlier and no Super Bowl. So, you know, it's kind of just worked out timing perspective all the way around. I mean, it seemed realistic what he said. I mean, he's not trying to be a total optimist. It wasn't doom and gloom. You know, my inclination from the get-go was that they're going to find a way to make it happen. There's so much money involved from all sides. And, you know, that was something that when they were talking about, I guess free agency was the first thing, you know, post-COVID. And there were some people saying, oh, they shouldn't do it. And, you know, the optics and all that. And of course, it was a massive success because people love the NFL. They want the content. That's one of the most fun, you know, particular days of the year where teams are getting influxes of new talent. you know, the draft went through and the ratings were up, you know, 30-35% across the board. And so those kind of two events kind of strengthened my view that there's just a lot at stake, you know, mostly money, and that's just the reality of it. But from all sides, I mean, we obviously want to play. This is what we do. It's fun for us. You know, we miss playing. We miss hanging out with our buddies. You know, we miss the competition. You know, it's just beneficial from all sides to come together and find a solution. And I just thought, you know, with how much was on the line and at stake, they would definitely come out with a solution. And, you know, I'm sure it's very difficult. I, like I said, I've not been privy to any conversations. I can't imagine having to figure all that out, you know, medically, football, fans, revenues. It's just, it's so many moving parts. You know, that's, luckily that's not part of my job capacity. I'd probably have less hair if that was so. It's going pretty good. I finally got my post COVID haircut, and sad state of affairs.
That's the Cal version. Let me give you the Syracuse version. Much simpler. Money talks, BS walks. There's so much money, I always felt like they'd get it done. That's where he's at. DeMaurice Smith calls it a 6 or 7. The Cal grad says there's a lot of money involved in this. I think we're going to play. We'll take a break. We're going to talk to Louis Riddick, a guy who used to work for Andy Reid. What does he think about where Andy Reid is right now? ESPN's NFL analyst Louis Riddick is next here in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I think I should have my own talk show.
You?
That is not a tough job.
It's harder than it looks,
Louis. Oh, please.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Time to talk some football. This segment brought to you by our friends at Hen House. Get stocked up for the weekend. Everything you need to get out on your grill. It's at your neighborhood Hen House. 97 years serving Kansas City. Taking care of you, taking care of me, my family. Hen House, great specials at the meat counter. Go to henhouse.com to see all the specials right now. Let's talk to ESPN's NFL analyst, Louis Riddick. He's on our Sprint guest line. Louis, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Yeah, doing well. Doing well, and certainly like the fact that we haven't lost any football yet. We'll see as we get closer, but certainly all signs point to a go on the NFL. But I want to take a minute to kind of look back on Coach Reid, a guy you worked with hand-in-hand with your days in personnel with the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, we've had some time with no baseball and no basketball and everything to kind of reminisce about some different things. I'm curious what went through your mind seeing Coach Reid finally win that Super Bowl he'd worked so hard for 21 years?
Well, I think first and foremost, you know, you like to see someone's dedication and their resilience ultimately result in them reaching the highest level in their profession, and that obviously was the case with him. He had been to the Super Bowl before as a head coach, obviously, when he was with Philadelphia and wasn't able to close the deal. But to see him actually reach the top of the mountain, so to speak, and win the ultimate prize, I mean, that was cool to see, because I know what kind of dedication he has. I remember, you know, when people ask me what's my lasting impression of him when I was in Philadelphia, it was the fact that not once in my entire time there, when I got there, was his car not already there? And when I left there, was his car not still there at the facility? So, and he wasn't just there just to burn time and be wasteful. The guy was always working. He was always trying to think of ways to improve his football team. And it's just nice to see that rewarded.
Yeah, it is. And did you see something? Like, I spent a lot of time here. Listen, Alex Smith was a good quarterback. He wasn't a great quarterback. And I'm a Syracuse guy, so understand where I come from this. I think Donovan McNabb was probably a very good quarterback. He wasn't a great quarterback. And I know a lot of people in Philadelphia, and you might – that might frustrate you to come back at me having worked with the guy and gone to – you know, competed with him to try to win championships as part of that organization and everything. But, you know, to me – I listened to Coach Reid get all this criticism, and what I saw was a guy who didn't have the guy that could just go make something happen out of nothing. Like, it's so hard. You know, to me, it's kind of like I talk about it in the talk show world. When we have games, you know, like a Monday after a Chiefs game to do a sports talk show, it's like somebody tipping the ball away at half court, and all I got to do is drive in and lay it up, right? Now, during the pandemic, we got to run perfect half court offense to get a basket, right? We got to come up with a topic. We got to really do our job well. And that's kind of what I think of a great quarterback is for a head coach, and certainly an offensive mind, is that chance to just get a gimme every now and then, to get a freebie, to make that big play to where you don't have to completely out-scheme somebody every single time down the field. And I never felt like, you know, people took that into account when they criticized his clock management. There's a big difference between Patrick Mahomes rifling the ball 30 yards down the field with 1:51 on the clock and one timeout, and Alex Smith deciding to tuck it and run for six, mm-hmm. and the clock's still ticking. You know, I never thought he got his credit. Or am I wrong? Is that just I'm seeing red and gold glasses here, and Andy Reid has evolved and made big changes to how he calls a game?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, he's steady learning. He's steady evolving. He's steady improving his craft. You never stop. I mean, even the great Bill Belichick is always looking for ways to improve upon his ability to lead, his ability to coach, his ability to correct. And that's what all the great coaches are continuing to do. And Andy Reid, make no mistake about it, is one of the great coaches who will be going into the Hall of Fame as soon as he is eligible. And he has learned from his time in Philadelphia. He'll learn from his time last year with the Kansas City Chiefs. He's not just going to try and duplicate everything they did last year and just think that that's going to work this year, because everyone else is constantly evolving. Now, that being said, there aren't any great coaches out there that are alive, I don't care what sport it is, who haven't had great players, who haven't had special players. The great dynasties of the 49ers and the Steelers and the Cowboys and, you know, and the Patriots, they've all had great players that could make things happen that coaches can't account for, coaches can't take credit for. And they need that kind of help. That's why it's a very symbiotic type of relationship. It goes hand in hand. That's why it's silly to sit there and have debates like, is it the players or is it the coaches? Is it the coaches or is it the player? Was it Brady or was it Belichick? Is it going to be Mahomes or is it Reed? It goes together, because I can tell you this. You can't do not automatically assume that if Pat went anywhere else, he would have had the same kind of a success as he's having with Andy. I'm sure he would be a good football player, there's no doubt about that. But you can't automatically assume that what he did in Kansas City would just transfer to any other organization. Andy has a lot to do with that. He had a lot to do with getting the Super Bowl with Donovan. When I was in Philadelphia in 2008, the 2008 season, we were a quarter away from getting back to a Super Bowl that year, and we lost an NFC Championship game down in Arizona. He was very instrumental in having Michael Vick have the best season of his entire career in 2010 after he, you know, returned from being incarcerated. So he is a great teacher, a great developer of quarterbacks, a great developer of football teams overall. And it became too easy because of the expectations that the Philadelphia fan base in particular had when he was here in Philly. It became too easy to beat on him for his quote-unquote perceived weaknesses and not give him enough credit for his strengths. And, you know, that comes with the territory when you're talking about sports. I think, though, people who look at this objectively and remove emotion and don't have a dog in the fight, so to speak, as far as rooting for the Chiefs or the Eagles, you know, when he was there, will say, this guy is a great teacher, a great leader, and a Hall of Fame coach. So give him his respect. He deserved it, and he's earned it.
Do you agree that the best way to be a great coach, you know, with the clock ticking, is to have a great quarterback? That's the part that people just look right past. That, you know, everyone who does great, because you know, I'm surprised that there hasn't been more acclaim, and maybe it's because people are embarrassed because of how long they beat Coach Reid up about his clock management. But, you know, AFC Championship game 2 years ago, the Chiefs need a field goal. They've got like 37 seconds. And one timeout, and they go get it, right? They get the mm-hmm. field goal, they tie it, it goes into overtime. Of course, they lose. But, like, mm-hmm. it doesn't get mentioned. Hey, 37 seconds, that game, everyone thought it was over, and they end up tying the game and get it to where a coin flip maybe sends them sure. to the Super Bowl in 2018. Clock management late against the 49ers, down, double digits, you know, they go down, yeah. they get the scores. It all looks real different when you have the weapon.
Sure.
I think some people should come forward and say, you know what? Coach Reid did it right. You just got to have the guys that will take what the scheme he gives him and maximize it. And that's what Patrick Mahomes does.
Right. It's always a give and take. There's always more to this. It's not just a, you can't point to a singular reason as to why coaches fail or succeed or why players fail or succeed. It's the ultimate team game. The thing about it is, look, we exist in a blame-oriented culture. We're always looking for someone to blame. It's easy. We're in a world where people are looking to point out people's shortcomings and just ride them and harp on them and harp on them. Pat Mahomes is great. No one knows that more than me. They told me about it long before he even got on the field that he was special. They recognized it, Brett Veach, Andy Reid. They knew it, okay? But he's not just a one-man band. I mean, what they have done down there as far as harnessing his skills, turning him loose, guiding him during the course of games, having great feedback back and forth with him, taking his input, giving their suggestions, again, turning him loose on the field. Yeah, of course he's going to make up for some things that maybe they miscalculate from time to time. They're human beings. They're coaches. It happens. And at the same time, he puts them, meaning Andy Reid, puts them, meaning the Kansas City Chiefs, in position to make plays that not every coach would put them in. Not every coach would have the same kind of timing or intuition to say, we're going to call this route with this protection on this play because I think they're going to get this defense. Not every coach can do that. And being someone who's been on the headset with him in game action in an NFC championship game, I can tell you this, for everybody who thinks it's so damn easy to just make sure to know exactly when to call timeouts or when to make the appropriate play or when to run the ball, when to throw, look, just stop kidding yourself. But I get it. That's what fans do. That's what critics do. But he's more than proven that he is a Hall of Fame coach. And it's not even up for debate anymore. It's just not. And I think from this point on, you're going to see people give him his respect. And I think that's why you saw after they won the Super Bowl last year, a couple months ago, why he was so happy, why so many people were so happy for him, because they know that a lot of the criticisms and a lot of the ways in which people criticized him over the course of his career, some of it was justified, but a lot of it went over the top. And I think you'll see that chill out a lot going forward now.
Why do you think, we're talking to ESPN's Lewis Riddick here, why do you think he's had so much more success with his coaching tree than, say, Bill Belichick has? And I qualify that because I understand it's a small sample size for both, for every coach that's out there. And where a coach goes, what their situation is, do they have the quarterback? I know all that plays into it.
Yeah.
But the numbers are, even with the small sample sizes, pretty night and day. With how successful the guys that have coached with Coach Reid have been versus the lack of success that's been there for the Bill Belichick candidates. Is it coincidence?
Yeah, there's a number. I'm sure there's a number of reasons why. I mean, look at one. I mean all of the guys who have left, who have come off of Bill's tree. I mean, all these guys in their own right are very good coaches. And they're being trained by the grandmaster. Okay, so you can't say that they're not good coaches and that they haven't been trained the right way, because they have. Now the question then becomes, well, has Bill really given them all the tools necessary to be able to function outside of his, his purview and outside of his direction? Has he really trained them to be able to exist on their own? I mean, who knows? I mean, obviously, history says that maybe he hasn't. Maybe Andy has done a better job as far as allowing guys to work autonomously when they're under his direction and really kind of grow underneath him and giving them more responsibility and allow them to develop the kind of skills that would allow them to be better once they got on their own. I mean, but unless you've been in Bill's staff meetings, unless you've been out on the practice field with him, unless you've been in coaches' film review sessions with him, you can't definitively make that statement. Now, there's been a lot of people who have hypothesized about, well, this is why Bill's guys haven't been good, and he doesn't really tell them anything, and he runs the show, and it's all him, and Josh McDaniels wasn't worth a damn, and neither was Eric Mangini, and neither was, Romeo Crennel and Charlie. Yeah, I mean, it's easy to say that, and it's easy to jump on the bandwagon with Andy because Doug has had success, Matt Nagy has had success, John Harbaugh has had success, and Sean McDermott has had success. Well, yeah, so, I mean, you got to give Andy his props. Obviously, Bill takes some criticism because of his guys not really succeeding. I get it. But look, as someone who knows Josh McDaniels very well, I can tell you he's going to be successful. He's going to get it turned around. Those guys are all very smart, and they'll learn from the mistakes that they've made. I think maybe if the one if one thing happens to the guys who work under Bill, maybe it's because they try too hard to be Bill instead of trying to be themselves. And when you're trying to copy someone else, it's not authentic, and you wind up getting away from what made you who you are in the first place. And he doesn't want people to be him. He doesn't encourage coaches to be like him. He encourages them to be the best version of themselves. Maybe that's the difference. But then again, that sounds like I'm indirectly taking a shot at Bill, and I don't want to do that because look, I played for the guy, and I can tell you this: he made me into the him and Nick Saban made me into the kind of football person I am now, and I wouldn't trade that for the world. I wouldn't have wanted to have been coached by anybody else other than those two.
There are different ways to be successful. How different are Coach Reed and Coach Belichick and Coach Saban, well, who's obviously been immensely successful?
I mean, Andy's personality is a little bit more laid back. He's not as in-your-face and as just obsessively demanding as those two are. I can't say how it is as far as how Nick handles his staff as opposed to Andy, but I'm saying from how I see Andy coach players. Now, he demands the best out of him. And he is an attention to detail type of guy. I just know that Nick and Bill are, look, when you talk about accountability and you talk about doing it right and or you have like the wrath of the heavens coming down on you, that's how it is. And that is not for everyone, and not every player responds very well to that. And you have to be made a certain way in order to deal with that kind of coaching style. Obviously, the results speak for themselves. Bill and Nick are tremendous winners. Andy's a tremendous winner, so to each his own.
Yeah. Louis Riddick is with us. I think, you know, if you cover the NFL, you know, and you're serious about it, you understand that the personnel say that a coach has is maybe, I don't want to say it's overrated, right? But like an organization that works well, there's always a give and take, and the personnel side always wants to hear what the coaches have to say, and the coaches always value the personnel side. So it should work well together, and maybe too much is made of, well, Coach Reed has the final say, or Brett Veach or John Dorsey or somebody else has the final say. And Coach Reed has been very deferential to both John Dorsey and Brett Veach. And any personnel questions, he says, well, that's their category. You know, that's what they do. Mm-hmm. And he walks away from it. Do you think, though, that you know, at least on paper, it's a somewhat reduced role personnel-wise as far as his say is here in Kansas City? And he always, in my conversations with him, you know, even unprompted, will say, well, that's one of the things I like here. I just focus on the coaching. He certainly has a strong voice on the personnel side. You'd be a moron not to listen to the man. And I know Brett Veach from talking to him. He absolutely, you know, he came up under Andy. He definitely listens to Andy's thoughts and welcomes his input. But do you think that did help, if there is even just a little bit that was taken off of his plate, and however the real inner workings go, that helped him be a better coach?
Sure it does. Sure. I mean, he's freed up now to allow his creativity to really flourish as far as coming up with new ways and perfecting old ways to get the most out of the players that he has. And look, him and Brett have a great relationship. They've been together for a long time. Of course, they converse about everything that's going on with his football team, because every transaction that's made affects what he's doing on the football field. So, of course, he knows. He may not spend the same amount of time grinding through tape as he did, you know, back in his days in Philadelphia, where he was in charge of everything as far as personnel is concerned. But every coach at some point in time during the team-building process dives into personnel because they have to. He obviously has a background in doing it. He knows what he's looking for. He knows what he wants. Obviously, he lets Brett set the table and really kind of drive the bus that way. But sure, he's involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And you want him involved. That's one of the things that's important for him to be there. How long, having been around and knowing the guy, how long do you think he coaches? Is he one of those guys that, you know, the only thing that will stop
know.
Him is health?
I think it's one of these deals where he could – okay, I think he loves it. I think the players gave him juice. He loves that lifestyle. He loves being a part of something bigger than just himself. He loves impacting other people, whether it be coaches, front office people, or players. And when you've had the kind of success that he's had doing it, and you really are driven by the success in terms of seeing other people succeed, you want to have that as long as you possibly can. And I think that's what will keep him around the game as long as he's healthy and willing and able to do it.
All right, that is Lewis Riddick, ESPN NFL analyst. And Lewis, I know you're up against it. You've got some other commitments you got to go to. Love to give you a Final Four, but we'll do that next time, Lewis. Thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it. Lewis Riddick from ESPN. We did literally take up every minute we had with him, and we do appreciate that time with Lewis Riddick from ESPN. We will take a break, come back. Up next, the kicker.
The program with Soren Petro.
Been doing that a few years.
Cool, long time.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
Well, I'm gonna lead off the kicker with where we started, and that is the unbelievable, the balls, if you will, of the Power Five conferences to ask the federal government, kind of this like, hey, I know we're kind of getting a new business here, to ask the federal government to go out and basically solve their little dilemma of the fact that because they haven't been paying players forever, that, you know, the states have now said, okay, screw this. We're going to start making it law in this state that you can make money. Everybody can make money off their name, image, and likeness. In a three-page letter obtained by Brett McMurphy and Stadium, the Power Five League commissioners asked Congress to, quote, enact clear national policy on name, image, and likeness, and not wait for the NCAA process to conclude. And, quote, so there will be uniform national standard that will preempt state name, image, and likeness laws. Time is of the essence. How about that?
That part's just, this is called the kicker. That's a kicker right in the stone. Time is
hey, by the way, we need you. We recognize that, like, we're basically making billions of dollars on athletics with kids that definitely get a good deal. Good deal. Not a fair deal. They get a good deal. I will never tell you that getting a free education and all the gear and all the food and everything that they get isn't a good deal. It's a good deal. Ask people who are unemployed right now. Ask people that have been working in meatpacking plants, fearing for their health. If, hey, I could go play sports and get all this for 4 or 5 years, it's a good deal. But it's not a fair deal because they're generating billions, right? So imagine the stones, not only to ask, hey, by the way, take some time out of, apparently everything's fixed. The economy's fixed, and we're over the COVID. That's in our rearview mirror. There's nothing really going on. So since you're done with that, let's get around to, can you go ahead and make us some universal rules? And really, we'll give you the universal rules we want you to make, but then can you make them a federal law so we don't have to deal with the NCAA because we don't have the balls to walk away from them and just go form our own thing, yeah. And we don't have to deal with the states. So can you guys just do this for us? Here's what we'd like you to do. And by the way, chop, chop.
Yeah, again, I go back to that first paragraph and how delicately it was termed. We realize as the country moves through the peak of the pandemic, Congress will begin to reintegrate other business onto its calendar. We would like to offer you our perspective on a timely issue. Reintegrate this business onto your calendar, please.
How is it timely? You've ignored it for decades.
Yeah.
This is the epitome of poor planning on your part is not an emergency for me.
This is something most people learned when they were in like fourth grade and they had mom, I need help with a project or, you know, I get it. It's when is it due? Tomorrow. When did you get it? A month ago. I really got to get done tonight.
I had something I had to do. I don't know. Whatever it was. It was something for the company and whatnot. And it's like 10:30 at night. My wife's like, hey, can you do this? I'm like, I got this thing. It's like, you know, she's like, oh yeah. You mean the thing you told me about like 6 days ago and you've waited till Sunday night at 10:30 to get started on it?
And you said, yes.
Upstairs, fatty. Let's go. It's like, yeah.
All right.
Right. So if I can't get away with that crap in my house, no way. No way should the Power Five be able to get away with it now, right?
Yep. Agreed.
Unreal.
But they will.
The Bulls! I can't.
Them some stones right there.
Time is of the essence. Oh, my Lord.
Stones would make Stonehenge jealous.
Listen, I'm going to tell you, we had a show planned out today, and it did not have this in it.
No.
And this tweet came down, what, how long before we went on the air?
10 minutes.
Maybe.
Maybe half an hour. Maybe
or we saw it. Yeah. Maybe it came out earlier, but we saw it moments before.
Yeah.
And I was just like, my head exploded. I'm mesmerized by their ability to do this. This is, listen, and I like Bob Bowlesby, and I respect Bowlesby. And listen, if they can get it done, oh, my Lord. Oh, my God, where are we as a country if this just becomes the top priority?
The Autonomy Five.
We're getting to the bottom of real issues, Saran. If that's, I mean, we like you said, we have it all fixed. This is the only thing that's left.
Yeah, we're done. Yeah, COVID's fixed. The economy's fixed. We're good.
Unemployment rates have never been lower, according to some news sources.
Fantastic.
So I should call my buddy JB in Vegas. Apparently he's working now, as a crap dealer.
Yeah, and with all the money that we're all making, just put it all on black. I mean, just let it ride, man.
No, he's not working. That's the point.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. It turns out that there actually are still some issues going on. My bad.
Oopsie.
Yeah.
A thing or two. No other issues in the news? No.
There's a lot of good things here. I just really want to just, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I'm sure there's somebody there going like, you communist. Like, okay, whatever. I mean, I kind of think that's communism, isn't it? Have the government rule.
You want a free market,
free enterprise?
You're communist.
I saw that. Somebody called me a communist. I'm like, first of all, what is it, 1974? Like, really? Is it, the term is socialist, sir. The term is socialist. That's the derogatory comment, or fascist.
64,
Those are the terms. Nobody who throws those around actually knows the definition of the word.
Ever seen a commie drink a glass of water?
They'd recognize how socialistic it is to be bailing out your biggest companies. But I digress. The Royals, I'm going to say this again. I've got other stuff, but you know what? I'm going to say this again. The Royals are not firing. They are not furloughing any employees. They are only taking the upper management that are taking some pay cuts, and they are going to give that money back when the economy gets better and when the economics of the game get better. This is, by the way, I want to point out, a new ownership group that gave a bunch of money to make sure baseball stays in Kansas City, and they got no money coming in, and they're taking care of their employees. That is how you start a weekend with a company that says, we got your back. Have a good one.
Jed Marshall.
Do you have a friend called Drugs?
Drugs Delaney?
How many individuals named Drugs could you possibly associate with?
Curtis Siebold.
He might
His dad will create virtual friends.
He might have a few hoagies stuffed down his pants.
Animatronic friends.
At lunch.
If he's lucky.
Oh, my God. Can't think of anything better, could you, Curtis?
No.
Just have one. Boy, wouldn't it be nice to have
hoagies
in your pants?
Gosh, I was such a reject in school. If only someone could have just stuffed food down the front of my pants. And I felt so much more important.
So, Ren Petro.
That man ate all our shrimp and two plastic lobsters.
Tis no man. Tis a remorseless eating machine. Arr.
WHB.